This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio and me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. It's our Friday night fan show special. And first up, of course, it is the boys from the Chelsea Fancast. Jonathan Kidd is here with me in the studio. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, mate. All right. How are we doing?
Can you do the show like that for the entire
time? Yeah, I've got no problem. I'll do that. No problem at all. I've got no teeth. But if that's okay with you, let's do that. Come on then. Come on, you blues. Chelsea. La, 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 la. I haven't been since 1945, but what are they playing like now?
What a start to the show. Genuine laughter here in the studio. You should see Jonathan Kidd's facials as he's doing that little impression as well. We've got plenty coming up over the course of the next hour. Of course, the news that Reece James has signed a 5-year deal at the club, or extended his stay, we should say. Conor Gallagher has returned from Charlton but gone back out to Swansea. I can imagine Lee Bowyer and the rest of the Addicts will not be happy about that. We're going to be touching on some more transfer news, some potential news, of course. The comments from Gus Poyet that Chelsea need to avoid going backwards and must sign a player in the January window. Can't wait to hear what you think of that, kiddo. We're going to be looking back at the game against Burnley, looking ahead to the game against Newcastle. And while we do that, we're going to have another member of the Fancast on the line. The trusty, the reliable Stamford Chidge joins us via Skype.
Hooray!
Hurrah! Hurrah indeed.
There he is. Hello, Mr. Chidge. How are we?
Well, I'm still recovering from Jonathan's rather toothless introduction.
Hello, Chidge, mate. How are you?
The image I have of you in my head at the moment is not a pleasant one. But it's lovely to hear your dulcet tones.
Is that what it is, Chidge? Thank you very much. How lovely of you. How sweet.
Good to hear you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, gents, it's been another busy week, like we said, in the life of the Blues. Well, or not. Kind of a bit of both, really. I suppose let's start on a positive with Reece James, a new 5-year contract.
Fantastic. He's the future. Brilliant, brilliant possibilities. Great player. A cross like Beckham. Just needs to improve a bit defending. Speedy, a huge unit. Poor old... who was the poor bloke from Brighton who suffered the fullback? Poor, what's his name?
Burn,
yeah, poor old bloke who just all he did was to have a normal challenge. Just, it wasn't anything else going on there. And he's really a top player. They really have unearthed somebody absolutely excellent there. And in fact, the cry is for, can we get a left back who's a bit similar? Poor old Dave. He fits perfectly into the way that Frank wants to play and is dynamic and such a unit, as I've said. And I'm very pleased they've nailed him, but it's really likely they would. He's not going to go. He's been with the club since he was 6, isn't it right, Chidge? 6 he's been there since.
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, like a lot of them, like Callum Hudson-Odoi, I mean, they've all been there for a very, very long time. And I'm just so delighted to see him, you know, sign for 5 years. I mean, we all know that in the broader scheme of things, you know, the length of the contract doesn't really mean a lot. But I think Jonathan's right, Matt. It shows such a great commitment from them. He looks so excited to be signing, and they're just so into it. It's just
wonderful.
But also,
he was so good the other day with Odoi, wasn't he? It was actually very revelationary. And with Tammy as well. And even Barkley, who played very well the other day, looked as if he was involved in the setup by just constantly spraying the ball down the wing to them both. You think, well, if that can work, then the future is very rosy indeed. Oh, very, very impressive. Yeah, I'm really pleased. But he's not likely to go anywhere else, is he? Because he's so committed to the club, and he's obviously pleased that he's got the opportunity. I mean, fantastic.
You would hope so, wouldn't you? If you think about, what the club gets a bit of a kicking from all of us, to be fair, on so many issues. But I have to say, since Marina's been in charge of a lot of this kind of stuff, she's proved to be a pretty doughty negotiator, and she doesn't take any nonsense. And I think it is shrewd to get him now, get him signed up for a long contract, because look at all the kerfuffle we had with Callum Hudson-Odoi last season with Bayern Munich. Now, I know things have changed considerably, and the youngsters are now actually, absolutely can see that they actually do have a future at the club. Even so, it'll stop a lot of the bigger clubs sniffing around, because this kid is a very, very good player.
I'm intrigued as to how it was rumoured that he was getting 90,000 a week, which is nowhere near what the fee Odoi was getting. So there must have been some tactful add-ons in that, I'd have thought. Otherwise, not that jealousy is something you hope that he suffers from, but there seems to be a slight wage difference between the two of them. So I wonder how that's been set up.
Yeah, I wonder if they dropped one, didn't they? One gets the impression that they were pressured into that or caved in a bit to Hudson-Odoi, because that was a lot of money to be paying a youngster.
It was.
And of course, we see it so many times, don't we, with other clubs. It doesn't half cause trouble when they all suddenly want the same amount. But, one trusts them to do it well. And look, it'd be naive of us all to sit here saying, but they all love playing for the club and they all bleed blue and they're like us, because at the end of the day, they are professional footballers and, it is a job for them. But hopefully, they'll all get signed up. They're all worth it, and they all stay there for as long as possible, because it'd be great to see, wouldn't it?
And also the environment's clearly good for them, and that they're playing with their mates and they're going to get an opportunity. So it augurs well, really, for the club, doesn't it?
Indeed, it does. Living the dream as well, Rhys James said, didn't he? Actually compared himself a bit. Well, he said he likes the comparisons to David Beckham. Said he's been one of the best crossers of a football, as we know, in English football over the past 50 years or in history, I suppose. So enjoys those comparisons. Says he's living the dream. Wants to stay with Chelsea for the rest of his career. Fellas, I just want to quickly touch on these comments from Gus Poyet today, because in a sense, they've kind of been sensationalised a bit, I suppose you could say. But he has been asked about Chelsea's transfer window and what Frank needs to do. And he said, everything's all good at the moment, but this is Chelsea. He said, it is tricky, but you have to add, if you stand still, you go backwards because the rest keep moving forward.
Yeah, but didn't Bruce Buck say at the press conference today, we're buying someone, but we're not going to tell you yet. And Frank then said, oops, Bruce has put the pressure on me. Mm. So that throws Gus's story into the water, doesn't it? The fact that Bruce says we're buying somebody, with the chairman says we're buying somebody, they're buying somebody. And so I think that's therefore instantly become old news, I'm afraid. Poor old Gus.
His headline that he was desperate to create has already been pushed back.
Yeah, already. Instantly.
I mean, what does one say? I mean, this Gus Poyet, a man who got fired from Bordeaux last year because he questioned the Bordeaux selling somebody. I mean, it's about as relevant as something that's totally irrelevant, to sound like Blackadder. But Bruce, well done, Bruce, because I mean in the presser today, I thought Frank did a very good job of batting down all sorts of transfer speculation, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because I mean, obviously we're all privy to social media and the lunacy that goes on there, and everybody spitting their dummy out because we haven't signed anybody. Ultimately, it's up to Frank and all the people at the board as to who we sign. We've all been saying, I heard you before we went on air, Matt, the whole idea of Frank getting a free pass, we had a transfer ban, nobody expected to be able to sign anybody. Add that to the fact that you very rarely sign any real quality in the January transfer window. And if we have to wait until the summer then to get really good world-class players in, which is what we need, then so be it. It doesn't bother me in the slightest.
I think he said today, it has to be a player that works in my system, which is...
Too damn right.
Absolutely right. He can't buy somebody who's somebody who's a superstar who won't fit, essentially. So, and also, I like the fact that he has made several pronouncements that are completely counter to what has been going around. Some really eminent journalists, as usual. I'm very
like Duncan Castle,
and well, not only him, but I'm not pleased with the way that certain London newspapers have been dealing
really?
With this.
Really, dish the dirt, Jonathan.
Well,
dish
I just
dirt.
Feel that I'll mention it. I just feel I'm allowed to say
name
I
and shame.
That, I feel the Standard have been a completely lazy. It's been absolutely absurd to have a story about Ake, for goodness sake, and then to talk about Barkley going to West Ham and Giroud going to Inter. None of those have been... Frank, in fact, said, he quoted, he said, Giroud's going nowhere while we haven't bought anybody. And yet, you'd have it was all done and dusted, according to the Standard. He's gone. I have to say, somebody who has gone is Ashley Young, of course. Of the five players going to Inter Milan from the Premier League, all of whom are over 29, according to the papers, Moses, there's one of them, Ericsson. Mourinho said this evening, Ericsson's still here. I haven't received an offer from Inter Milan. So it's all absolutely fabricated. And several people have complained that there have I got, you know, dealing with Ron's rumours. Well, Ron, to be fair, has hardly said anything counter to all of this. Ron has got...
Well, I saw a tweet recently by Ron saying there is no truth to any of the rumours whatsoever. I'm keeping shtum.
Yeah, absolutely right. Because all the people that he's mentioned, it's he's been absolutely correct about so far. He hasn't. It's his main thing at the moment is that they're going to sign somebody to put competition against Kepa, which makes
and I think
absolutely
he also
great
said
sense.
If anybody argues with me, I'm going to throw a Millwall brick at them.
I would say, gents, that part of this problem is the global phenomenon that is the Premier League, and sadly, we are fueled by transfer speculation slash, like you're saying, kiddo, complete nonsense that fills newspapers, fills various internet sites. Gets you the clickbait, gets you the headlines, that gets people talking, and, dare I say it, sometimes helps you fill quarter of a section of a radio show.
And indeed, it's perfect for that. But, let's look at some of the rumours. Christensen off to, where was he supposed to be going to? Milan, right? Frank came on and said, luckily, at least our manager is aware of some of these rumours, and he said last week, no, that's not happening. And then he played excellently against Burnley. Thus, in fact, will he be playing tomorrow against Newcastle with Rudiger? Because that pairing was really excellent. It was like a blooding for Christensen, because Woods gave him a very hard time, and yet there he was, head and shoulders above him, and Woods, and there were several players lying on the floor with head injuries in the Burnley game that not as a consequence of anything illegal, just from normal challenges. So he came through that very well, so he's not going anywhere. The manager has now made a statement that Barkley isn't going anywhere, and that was never on anywhere, at all anyway. So that was just absolutely fabricated, this loan to West Ham.
Although, I would say, even though that has been fabricated, I suppose, are one of the people on this show
indeed.
Who kind of said, it's time for him to leave.
But no, but then, to my bemusement, he played really excellently against Burnley. And the manager went, oh, yeah. And you go, and then there's an article in the newspaper, which I haven't been paying much attention to. It actually says, and he says, I had a leg injury. None of us knew about it.
No. I think the other point about that, Matt, is it underlines, I mean, come on, we all work in the media, you know, we know how it works. Mm-hmm. So what happens is you've got David Moyes, who's just arrived as the new manager of West Ham. Barkley came through while Moyes was the manager of Everton.
Yeah, makes sense.
They put two and two together and they add five, and there they have a story, and it takes, the blue touch paper is lit, fuel is added to the fire. And, more clickbait is enjoyed by one and all. That's what happens.
But I
love the fact that Frank just completely dissed it.
Yes, he dissed it. Yes, I love that as well. Well, the fact that the worst to me has been this ludicrousness of the Inter purchases, which really don't make any sense at all. That, they're all over 29. At least Young is gone. I still don't understand why Conte's bought him. But... you've got Young and Giroud. Giroud was done and dusted, according to the newspapers. Nothing's happened at all.
That's the only one that Frank kind of admitted that something might happen.
But he's talked about bringing in somebody. It's always about bringing somebody in, isn't it? He said that.
Absolutely.
I'm not selling anybody unless we've got a replacement. So
Anyway, I've heard a rumour that you might be rumoured to be making a transfer to Chelsea and getting your boots dusted down. Jonathan, is that true?
Yeah, that's right. Hang on, I've got my hernia. Hang on a second.
We're just going to let him fix that hernia there for Jonathan Kidd. I suppose part of the argument of Serie A as well, and some of these older players as well, is that perhaps Serie A, a slightly slower league, maybe suited better to a lot of these older players like Ashley Young. What a move that is. We'll wait and see what happens with Olivier Giroud. But next up, we're going to be talking about that victory over Burnley last week to stop that home hoodoo curse.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's a Chelsea fan show here on Love Sport, and me, Matt Beadle, with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Jonathan Kidd.
Yep, Kiddo.
And Stamford Chidge joining us via Skype.
Evening all.
Chaps, all it took was another hop, another skimp, and skip. He's certainly not skimping, that's for sure. Another skip and another jump from Jorginho to open the scoring against Burnley last week. 3-0 for Chelsea, making sure it wasn't three home defeats on the bounce. Can we quickly talk about Jorginho's penalty? Because we've spoken about this many times before in the show, but it just keeps getting better. And the fact that goalkeepers simply cannot read him, knowing full well what he's going to do, it's just incredible.
Does he leave it for a moment to look at them, to make them, so they dive and he then changes his angle? Is that what he does? Is he that competent at taking penalties?
Oh, absolutely. We're seeing this now more and more with the modern footballer. You see it with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Arsenal as well. Pretty much watches the keeper all the way. In some cases, doesn't even look down at the ball. Just watches the goalkeeper.
The keeper.
Back in the day, Heide Helgerson of Watford and QPR fame. He was brilliant at doing it. And he speaks to a lot of goalkeepers back then, and none of them could ever save his penalties. It's the same with Jorginho.
He got a wonderful penalty against Chelsea when... our favourite manager was the Queen's Park Rangers manager, Chidge, Mr. Warnock, when he just stood basically on David Luiz. So I remember it's just down below me, and Luiz somehow managed to have the referee gave a penalty when he didn't actually do anything at all, Luiz. Helgeson just sort of caved in beautifully, and I've always remembered. And I had a terrible experience because I went out that evening and met him in the pub. Not the pub, in a restaurant. There he was with about six Queen's Park Rangers players. And I found myself forced to say, very good penalty, Mr. Helgerson, which I didn't want to say at all, but there he was in front of me. And I just stood up and there he was. And I went, what do I do? What do I do? Help. And rather than just ignore him, I felt duty bound because it was a great penalty. Actually, as you said, that's exactly, he was terribly good at that as well. But he got the penalty by a nefarious dark art.
Right, okay. You know. We like to think that Jorginho isn't doing that. In terms of his penalties as well, I think it's 19 scored now. He's missed just once. And that was for Napoli against Udinese back in 2017. Simone Scuffit. I'm going to say Scuffit. What would it be, kiddo? An Italian. Simone Scuffit?
Scuffet.
There we go.
I don't know. I'm a French.
Maybe the C's silent.
Oh, what? Suffet.
Chuffet.
Chuffet.
Tell you what, Jorginho doesn't scuff it, does he?
Well, that's what I was going to say. You got there
before me.
Oh,
sorry.
As it goes,
that's because I'm on Skype and you weren't able to give me the
eye. Yeah, to read your lips or give you the eye, that's right.
like he gives
to the goalkeeper. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's the amazing thing about Jorginho, Matt. I mean, what I can't understand, I mean, you know, you're a bit of a goalkeeper expert. I mean, actually, funny enough, hopefully we'll have Clayton on in a minute, who's also a goalkeeper expert. But what I cannot understand is why they always fall for it, because he's absolutely metronomic in what he does. I mean, you know, he puffs his cheeks out for a couple of times, takes a couple of side steps, and then he walks towards the ball, you know, and it's that little hop and a skip. They know he's going to do that. And yet they seem to be like a rabbit in the headlights, and they just go early. And that's it. It's
well,
in the back
what should they
the
do? Should they just wait for him then? But if they just stand in the middle and don't do anything, the ball still goes in the corner.
Yeah, but you say that. But that's what I mean. Do you know what? I can't remember the goalkeeper. It might have been Edison. But you know, in the Carabao Cup final last season, I had a good view of it, obviously, because it was down our end and I was quite high up. But that, I think, is what Edison did. He waited for him, and that's why he missed it. And the cup belonged to Man City, you know. So,
well, remember, so he has missed another penalty, but it was in a shootout.
Well, that was a shootout. Yeah. His record's not so good in shootouts, apparently. He's 4 out of 6.
I do think that penalties are a 50-50 chance in terms of the goalkeeper. Sometimes you've just got to suck it up and you go, and if you don't get it, you don't get it. You're not going to lose out anything as a goalkeeper, really, because you're not judged by penalties. But I do think Chidge or Kiddo, whoever said it, is actually right. Maybe now with Jorginho, you do. Rather than gamble, you wait, because sometimes he doesn't hit them too far in the corner and you go, do you know what, I'm going to try and react, in fear of repeating, you know, a Peter Shilton 1990 scenario where you wait for everyone and dive and look like you're close to it but absolutely nowhere near it. But I think that is probably the best tactic now for goalkeepers because, yeah, he's just unbeatable. Elsewhere in that game, fellas, we've got to talk about Callum Hudson-Odoi. First goal for the club. First Premier League goal for the club.
Well, he was great with Reece James' second half. I felt the first 20 minutes, it was a bit hit and miss. Frank said that the energy was there from the beginning, but I thought the head started going down. I thought Burnley started getting into it, particularly after their VAR disallowed goal. But I mean, in essence, poor old Burnley. As I say, poor old Burnley was they do use the long ball a lot, and they try and play Woods in to play the ball down for second phase ball in the penalty area or even wherever he controls it. And he's a decent player. Somebody had a go at him on social media and they said he was just a plank, but
he is called Wood, isn't he?
Clever, Chidge. God, you're on fire tonight. Bloody hell, fantastic. You should Skype more often.
I should.
You should, yeah. But, the first 20 minutes, nobody covered themselves in glory. We looked nervous. I think, as Frank said, there was an element of nervousness. And then we got the penalty, which we looked slightly soft, to say the least. I think he is very capable, William, of when somebody instantly goes down for a tackle, he's in his element because he can just slide in and leave the foot in. So whether it was a penalty or not, he got the penalty. And from then on, other than another scary moment where VAR was employed, we just got better and better and better. And the second half just saw them completely take off. And Odoi carried on in the same way he'd played against Forrest. And I think Forrest was a bit of a watershed for him because I know it wasn't a very good side, but it allowed him to get confidence playing at Stamford Bridge. And in the second half, he and Reece James looked a really fantastic combination, whipping the ball in all the time, as did Odoi as well. And we saw more of the player that we'd seen last year in the Europa League before his injury. So I think it's perfect timing because Pulisicki is still injured.
I like that. Pulisicki. I like that a lot.
Thank you. So therefore, he'll be playing. And I think now's the opportunity for him to show his talent, because he's clearly a talented player. And I think he's been suffering because of his injury. And I think we've been a bit critical of him because he's not been involved. But the last two games, he's shown his talent, as bizarrely did Barkley, who played completely out of his skin in the second half with these huge flowing passes absolutely to feet and not faffing, as we established at the show last week, that's what he did, as Dan said, which he does. He wasn't caught in possession at all. You suddenly think, well, yeah, if there's a fluidity here like that, Frank's presented with a selection problem, and all to the good. Fantastic.
I have to say as well, he said, didn't he, we've seen the real Callum Hudson-Odoi now. And he said, if he carries on like this, he's going to be a great player. Said that he enjoyed seeing him score inside the six-yard box. He felt he got more satisfaction out of that than him curling one in.
Yeah, because he always has a shot, and he's occasionally just, some of his shots from distance are accurate, but not accurate enough. That's something he's got to improve upon, because he frequently has a shot that's inches above the bar. Well, no, just lower your sights a bit, you know. But I agree completely. And I was fortunate, actually, that Abraham didn't get his head to the ball for that, because if Abraham had flicked it on, he'd have been offside. But it actually came off a Burnley head, because they did the VAR on that as well, and you could see that it flicked a Burnley head. Therefore, he was onside. Because, and also, when the ball was kicked, he'd made his run when he was behind the Burnley player.
Quick bit of trivia, fellas, like we always do on this show, of course. That goal, at 19 years and 65 days, meant he became the youngest player to score their first Premier League goal for the club since who?
Jimmy Greaves.
Carlton Cole. There he is. Stamford Chidge has said it from the Skype airwaves. Yes, Carlton Cole, Middlesbrough, April 2002.
It's always from the Premier League start, though, isn't it? It was like Alan Shearer has been quoted as the best centre forward, and it's always been since the Premier League was. In fact, Greaves was much more on the the scoring sheet earlier, scored more goals, didn't he? 350 something. But it's because he's that's almost when the league was in black and
white. When everything started to be recorded, yeah. In 1992. I mean, Shearer, 260, got far more, well, not far more than that, but a fair few more than that. Of course, got a hat-trick on his debut.
Yeah.
That isn't in the record books in terms of how many goals he eventually scored.
Was that for Southampton?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, against Arsenal. Fellas, in terms of the home hoodoo, I know it wasn't too much of an issue, but there was that fear with that stat, of course. First time losing three games in a row since, I think it was 1993.
Yeah.
That's over now, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was distracted by... Look, this is the difficulty you see about not being in the studio where you can't see what I'm doing. And I was distracted.
Oh, I don't... Don't tell us. Chidge, come on.
Tell me the question again.
It was the three... Premier League home games, well, the three games on home turf, losing three in a row, of course, that didn't happen. Okay.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask you anyway, actually, because, you know, Jonathan and I talked about this the other day, but I was a bit kind of, you know, whoa, what's going on here? No Kovacic in the midfield, Jorginho, Barkley and Mount.
We were disturbed, weren't we, Chidge? We were disturbed by the selection, weren't we?
Well,
we were disturbed.
It was a bit, but I mean, maybe... You know, that's the answer, because if you think about it, and I mean, Matt, it'd be interesting to hear what Matt has to say about this, but one of the problems that we've had that we've not had enough creativity to unlock pretty stodgy, stubborn away side defences at Stamford Bridge. And also, you know, we've not had an effective width. And I think the fact that we have more creativity in midfield and we had a really effective, you know, wide play, Willian on one side, and Hudson-Odoi linking up really, really well with Reece James on the other, actually made it a lot easier for us to break it down. But the reality is, Matt, if you get an early goal, you get a goal ahead against these sides, it doesn't half make the game a lot easier, because apart from anything else, I think it gives a lot of these youngsters a bit of confidence. And I think that that's perhaps also been an issue this season when they've been playing at home.
But it also stretches them, doesn't it? They have to try and get a goal back. So the two blocks of five... aren't used as much, unless of course they just carry on playing the same way and try and get a goal on the break. But it means that they tend to push forward a bit more and get a bit stretched, so it gives Chelsea more of an opportunity to do the quick passing. I think he's even Tammy said it during the week, that the quicker the ball is passed, the better a team they are. I mean, what slightly worries me about Kovacic not playing is that he appears to be the great proponent of this, the speed of getting the ball out of tricky situations. So perhaps it's that he's not, I don't know who should not play. You know, who does he not select? If the midfield of, presumably Kante will be playing this weekend, if the midfield doesn't have Jorginho
well,
in
that,
it.
Is that for real? I mean, because Kante was 75%.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Hammy, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
He's still got the hammy. Well, in which case, in a sense, it's possibly solved, but still Kovacic doesn't get in if he plays Barkley again. And he plays Jorginho in the middle. Because before... when Kovacic and Jorginho played, the ball was passed more quickly than I've ever seen it, practically. And that was the way Frank wants to play. So I can't quite work out why it's all changed suddenly.
I mean, without kind of completely going off at a tangent, it's a bit like, you know, trying to figure out the England cricket batting lineup these days. It's difficult to squeeze them all into the one pot. And in a sense, Mason Mount's a bit like David Bairstow or Joss Butler. You know, you really don't want to drop him, but it does create a bit of a problem, because if you have him playing up forward, where I think he links up very, very, very well with Tammy Abraham, almost like a kind of a number 10, if you like, but in an advanced role, you lose that width, because what Frank tends to do is to play him on the other side to either William or Pulisic. But if you have him in the midfield, then you have to leave out either Kante or Kovacic, and that gets complicated too. I mean, look, I'd rather have this problem than not having anybody decent.
Indeed, competition is great every time. I just think that, some people are critical of Mount, aren't they? But the amount of running
God
he
knows
does.
Why. He's fundamental to the way we play, Jonathan, and the way Frank wants us to play.
Absolutely. He buzzes so excellently.
It's off the ball stuff, isn't it, that he does, that people just don't see if they're watching it on the box, of course.
I was going to say, gents, to be fair, this is a great problem for Chelsea. All these midfielders trying to cram into one, and we're going to touch on N'Golo Kante next. Only 19 appearances in all competitions so far this season. Incredible to think how well Chelsea are doing essentially without him for large periods. All of that next on the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast. Jonathan Kidd.
Hey, kiddo.
So we nearly forgot for the first time ever in the history of the Chelsea Fan Show.
Thinking about what I was just about to say, actually.
Okay, lovely. Stanford Chidge is with us via Skype. And in a moment, we're also going to have Clayton Bierman on the line too. Quite a test, I tell you what. Three of you in the studio, but all in different places. But gents, before we move on, I want to quickly touch on N'Golo Kanté a little bit more, because we were talking about him before the ads. And news has broken this week. Now, this is alleged, of course. This is claimed that apparently he was taken out of UEFA's Team of the Year. This is a fans' Team of the Year, in order for a certain Cristiano Ronaldo to be accommodated. Now, the Team of the Year has always had the formation of a 4-3-3. However, once it was 4-4-2 a couple of years ago, but it has been switched this year to a 4-2-4. Now, apparently, Ronaldo had fewer votes than Messi, Lewandowski and Sadio Mane. But in order to accommodate him, it means that N'Golo Kanté has had to drop out of the 4-3-3 formation in order to let Ronaldo in.
I don't think they've done it far enough. I think they should make it 3-1-6 from now on, and have six forwards and just choose whoever they want and not choose any midfielders or defenders. I just think it's becoming absurd now, isn't it? You might as well just pick any six proper players. And if it was dealing with FIFA, in a FIFA games, let's have nine forwards, shall we, and just choose them and only have one defender. I think it's absolutely ridiculous if he was chosen. But why accommodate? You know, it's just somebody saying, oops, we've left somebody out who's going to get us a few who should be involved in this because he's got the the best shirt deal or something or whatever. I mean, it's becoming absurd, isn't it?
It's pathetic, JK. Matt, you don't know this, but I've, funnily enough, just written an article about Kanté, because there are also, I've been seeing a lot of nonsense on Twitter all week with people saying, oh, we should cash in on him and get rid of him and go and buy somebody we like on FIFA 20. I took my 13-year-old nephew to his first game at Stamford Bridge last Saturday, which was, I think I was probably more excited than him. But I asked him before the game, I said, well, who are you looking forward to seeing, today? And the player he most wanted to see play was N'Golo Kanté. And this is a 13-year-old kid. So not for him, Jorginho, the fanboy's favourite. Not for him, the exotic and wonderfully coiffured Willian. Not for him, the young, exciting starlets of Mason Mount, Tammy Abraham, Callum Hudson-Odoi and Reece James. No, he wanted to see a proper footballer, N'Golo Kanté. And I'm delighted. I think my nephew clearly knows more about football than me. So I love him for it.
Love,
he's dead right.
Love every minute of that, Chidge. And absolutely, he is. And another man who may well agree with you is your good friend, your good pal, yeah, your cohort on the Chelsea Fan Show. Clayton Bierman is joining us now. Hello, Clayton.
Good evening, chaps. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm just tucking into sausages and chips.
Hello, Clayton. Hello.
Hello, toothless man.
Hello. How did you like that character? You're all right.
I did. It's a fantastic character. I'm really hoping you've got a flat cap and a sort of waistcoat and a sort of a scarf.
Yeah, he's got a rattle.
And will you tuck your thumbs into the top of the waistcoat and start doing the Lambeth walk?
The other thing I'll say is when the ball is kicked down the pitch, I'll go, yeah, that's more like it, as it just goes nowhere near.
As you swing your rattle.
Indeed.
I don't know what the deal is with Kanté. Obviously, he was damaged by last season, and it's hard to know how much damage was done when he played in the Europa League final, because he obviously wasn't fit and was injected, but still managed to put in the most ridiculous performance. But it's quite strange because they talk about his injuries, but his performance in the Super Cup against Liverpool was probably one of the best performances by a Chelsea player this season. So it's difficult. I don't know what the news is. I don't know what's wrong with him. Apparently, he was it a
tight hamstring?
A hamstring.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought last week against Burnley that they could do the job without him, but he is our only world-class player. So
it's weird, isn't it? But it was such a strange selection anyway, as Chidge and I were saying, that it's confused me as to whether he was, they might be leaving him out this weekend if they do, because they were happy with the formation.
And why not, JK? But I tell you what, this guy's played non-stop for 4 years solid. I think he was in a select group of players who at the end of last season had played over 50 games. And I mean, the fact that we call him two Kantes means he probably played 100 actually in reality, but you know, he's played a lot of games. And then you get an injury like the one he got, and it quite often can lead to a lot of other niggly injuries coming up if he's not managed properly. And I think the one thing that I'm really hopeful for is in Frank Lampard, you've got somebody who will always do what's best for the club, number one, but also it will be sympathetic to a player because, of course, he only stopped playing recently. So, you know, who better than Frank Lampard to understand how to look after a midfield player who's box to box effectively, but also who will need careful management with his injuries. So don't rush him back. Don't rely on him. Don't push him even harder because you know with N'Golo Kante, if you ask him to do something, he'll just do it because he's so selfless. So I'm hoping that actually we can cope without him a lot this season and that they get him back to full fitness. Because here's the other thing. You know all this rubbish about he can't play anywhere other than defensive midfielder. I mean, Clayton's absolutely spot on about that Super Cup performance. But also, do you remember the goal he scored against Liverpool when they beat us 2-1? That very un-Kante-like, but he's capable of doing that. He's a world-class player. He's our only world-class player. You need to look after him because he will be back because form is temporary, class is permanent.
But he has to start being fitter. And if the way to do it is to hardly play in this season, knowing that he'll be back for next season, well, that's absolutely fair enough.
Bang on, Jonathan.
You are always bang on, Jonathan. Oh. And whether you're going to be bang on about the game against Newcastle this weekend, who knows? Now, you've won the last three against Newcastle, but when you look over the record of the past six before that, not always the best, at St James's Park in particular, I should say here. Lost 4, drew 1 and won 1. So the record at St James's Park isn't the best.
We have a tendency to go there and I feel be intimidated by the atmosphere.
Do you think?
Yeah, well, I think they raise their game as well because we're soft southern, what's it? We have put in some very, very below par performances there. Nearly every time that I go there and watch, in fact, and I'm stuck in the gods as one does. It's almost as if they put a renter crowd of Newcastle fans next to you just to abuse you so you can hardly be heard. There's a big din. It gets freezing. I remember watching a game there and a solitary cloud appeared over us all and then dumped snow on everybody, and Chelsea's performance got as cold as the
I hope you're not going this weekend, mate.
I'm not, actually, no. Cause
you sound like a Jonah.
Yeah, I am a bit of a Jonah, actually. Yeah, I mean...
Do you know, I've got a really wonderful random fact for you. Matt will wet his pants at this. He'll love this. He says, statistically, Newcastle away is Chelsea's fourth toughest place to claim all 3 points based on all-time Premier League results with a win percentage of just 29.2.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah, it makes sense. It's always tricky there. It's always we're as I say, we're never quite on top of it.
Isn't it true that that Jose's never won at Newcastle? He certainly didn't win with us. I remember that awful FA Cup tie.
I was there.
Duff got sent off, and we ended up with somebody different in goal. That was a dreadful.
Wasn't it?
Clivert scored. Yeah, but no, wasn't that where Shearer tackled Wayne Bridge, and who was taken off, and he'd already gone past his substitutes because he took Cole off after 20 minutes. He did his thing because Cole was playing dreadfully. But also he had it in for Cole. Do you remember that period where Cole appeared? If Cole didn't track back, he would always tut.
He did the same to him at Fulham, didn't he? He took him off after half an hour, one game.
Yes. He became his whipping boy to an extent.
I don't know why. I mean, the Newcastle game over the last couple of years has always seemed to be a televised game for some strange reason, because it's never, ever actually a good game of football.
Well, isn't it because they think that they're going to beat us? Isn't it become one of those? It's always, they're a banana skin. It's always that.
Well, and I think once again... down recently. We've lost 4 times since 2013.
But we won last year.
We did, with an own goal.
I think the year before, didn't we come from 2-0 down? Was it Kante scored an amazing long range goal?
I don't. I mean, we drew 2-2 in 2015. That's the one you're talking about.
When we were 2-0 down and we came back to draw 2-2.
Yeah, I think you're right there. But it's a bit of a bogey team, really, I think, isn't it? Although, you know what? Ray of hope on the sunshine or the sun horizon. Steve Bruce has lost more league games against Chelsea than anyone except his former playing side. So there you go. He's lost 16 games against Chelsea as a manager and 17 against United.
You are the stat man this evening, Chidge.
I am. Because I'm not in the studio and I can look at my computer.
I'm loving every minute of it, mate. Next, we are going to be getting an opposition view from Newcastle to hear what they have to say about this weekend's game.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's a Chelsea fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys on the Chelsea Fancast. In a moment, we're going to speak to Steve Wraith from NUFC Matters ahead of that game at St James's Park this weekend. But kiddo, you've just got something you wanted to touch on.
Well, I just wanted to talk about the fact that dear actor called Derek Folds died today, who was initially Basil Brush's alter ego. He was the human in the relationship, but was then in... Yes Minister, and Casualty and Heartbeat, and was a lovely, lovely man, a terrific actor, and of course a big Chelsea fan, and had a season ticket until it was difficult for him to get up the stairs, so he didn't go anymore. But just wanted to mention him because he was a big mate of my father's, and they went to Chelsea together on several occasions, and he will be sorely missed. A lovely, lovely chap.
Absolutely. Hear, hear, kiddo. 100%. Condolences go out to his family, of course. We're going to move now on to Newcastle United.
The Opposition View on Love Sport.
OK, so Chelsea do travel to St James's Park this Saturday, 5:30pm kickoff. Newcastle have won just once in six league games, drawing once and losing four times. To talk about that right now, we have Steve Wraith from NUFC Matters on the line. Hello, Steve.
Yeah, good evening, lads. How are you?
Hello, great, thanks. Nice, good Steve. To speak to you.
Great to have you on the line, Steve. In terms of Newcastle's form of late and the form we were talking about with regards to Chelsea and recent results against Newcastle as well, they've won the past three against the Toon. How do you see this one going?
It's an interesting game. Newcastle aren't really playing well, haven't played well all season. The points total that they have is a little bit misleading, and Steve Bruce has really got away with it so far. And obviously, a good cup result against Rochdale. I know Rochdale, but from our point of view, it was, you know, I suppose from a supporter's point of view, it's positive to see goals going in. Positive to see our £40 million striker has finally found his level and notched against it.
You're not a fan of his then? You're not a fan of his?
No, definitely not. I'm busy having an online argument with people over him again. But, for me, it's still a bit doom and gloom. The Rafa hangover is long gone now. We're stuck with Steve Bruce. The annual takeover talk has just resurfaced once again on Tyneside, just as Steve Bruce is asking for money from the owner to invest in.
Has the owner not said that he's keen to splash the cash? Is that not happening? I was reading, or is that it'll be about $5 million? Will it rather than splashing?
Yeah, well, this is it, exactly. It's always interesting in Newcastle. There's never a dull moment. But, I mean, our chief executive before Christmas, Lee Charnley, came out and said they'd done all their business in the summer window, and now we're in this position where, you know, Mike Ashley, you know, because Steve Bruce demands transfer talks, Mike Ashley appeared at the Rochdale game. For us, it's just a constant merry-go-round of farce, and we're never happy, really, are we? We're never really happy. So Chelsea's probably coming at a good time. Obviously, I've been watching Chelsea's results most of the season. I always pay attention. I've got a few mates who are Chelsea fans. My former business partner, Joe Allen, of course, was a centre forward.
Oh, Joe Allen! Played for Hartlepool, of course, didn't he?
A legend at Hartlepool. He has a street named after him.
He scored his first goal, I think, in a League Cup game or something. And he went. This is when the ground was a Greyhound track, and he went up to the shed end to celebrate and got a bit lost, I remember, because he was so keen on celebrating. You felt for him. It sort of went on and on. And in fact, in the programme notes the following week, Ken Bates said something like, it would have been nice, because it just made it 1-1, I think. Would have been nice if he'd actually paid attention to the amount of time that was left, which the referee wasn't going to add on. And he just came, which he came back and actually carried on playing the game. But... But yeah, when Porterfield was manager, I remember. At that period.
Right, yeah. He had massive competition up front as well.
He did.
David Speedy and people like that.
But he does a podcast, doesn't he, as well? He's a
great. I mean,
he's a canny lad, actually. Yeah.
He will be. He'll be at the game tomorrow, and I've been down to Chelsea a couple of times when he's been the guest, and he always gets a great reception from both Chelsea and Newcastle fans alike, you know.
Yeah. Oh, good for him. Sorry, I interrupted you.
But from the game's perspective tomorrow, I mean, you know, Newcastle have got players coming back, which is a bonus. Our home form against Chelsea, you know, in recent years hasn't been too bad. I mean, obviously we lost last year 2-1, but then previous seasons Newcastle have had a bit of a hold over Chelsea.
Yeah.
You know, I remember winning 3-0 a couple of years ago. I think there was a 2-2 draw in there, and I think the games before that we won comfortably, you know, 2-1, 2-0, 3-2. We've had some great results. So, you know, from my perspective, I think tomorrow will be an interesting game. Newcastle are They're not a team to attack. You don't need to worry too much about, you know, goals flying in from all angles from centre forward. Our defenders have scored most of our goals this season. But, you know, it'll be an interesting setup. And as I say, with players coming back, the injury list is starting to lessen. We've got John Joe Shelby available. Matt Ritchie, who is probably our favourite player as supporters, is coming back. Kieran Clark's back. Willems, who's on loan at the moment, has done particularly well. He's back. And, of course, the captain, Jamal Lascelles, had his first run out in the FA Cup this week. There's been unconfirmed reports as well that the enigma that is Alan Saint-Maximin could be back in the team. And he's the player that gets the fans out of the seats. We don't have many players
He worries me. He's a good player. Yeah, quick.
You mentioned him the other day, didn't you, Chidge?
He could potentially cause you some problems because he's quick, he's unpredictable, he's got a touch of the Tino Asprias about him. He doesn't know what he's going to do, so your defenders haven't got much chance of knowing what he's going to do either.
Has he still got the yellow hair, or will he change his haircut?
He still wears the hairband and stuff like that. But yeah, look, you know, he is exciting. You know, I was doubtful about whether he would be able to have an effect at the club and whether he would settle in. But out of all the imports that we had in the summer, he has really settled in. Andy Carroll looks like he's injured again. Kelsey surprise, which means we'll have to which means we're going to have to start my favourite player, which of course is Joe Linton, who you know, he's just flattered to deceive. I mean, you know, I do seriously think that there's been some kind of serious deal gone on there. We can't
have mistaken identity. Like, what was that Southampton player, Ali Dia, or whatever his name was.
Ali Dia, yeah. Who was George Weah's cousin, who interestingly went from went from Southampton to Gateshead and then ended up playing for my pub team on a Sunday for a game. And again, talk about finding your level. He came and played for us for one game. He played 15 minutes, scored 2 goals, and we never saw him again. He found his level, Ali Dia.
Oh, so he was quite good when he played for the pub team then. He was okay.
100%, yeah. Two great headers.
I reckon when they signed Joe Linton, they actually hadn't seen him play. I reckon they thought, Joe Linton, that's a proper Geordie name, that. And I thought they got him in, and then they realised he's actually Brazilian.
You speak to any Brazilian, though. I mean, there's one or two Brazilians living in the North East, and they've said, well, Joe Linton's not even a Brazilian name. So even they're scratching their head. You know, it's Joe from Linton, or is it, you know, the...
Oh, brilliant.
Steve, or is it Joel Inton?
Steve, it's been great having you on, boss. Just before you go, a quick score prediction from you.
I'm going to be optimistic as far as Newcastle fans can be. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Chelsea's played really well this season. I'm a Frank Lampard fan. I'm really pleased that Chelsea gave him the opportunity, and I think he'll go on from strength to strength under his management.
Thank you.
I hope it doesn't start tomorrow, but I hope you go on a decent run because I've got no animosity towards Chelsea whatsoever. So good luck, lad.
Thank you. I think you always raise your game against us there, so I think it'll be 1-1.
Lovely stuff. That was Steve Wraith there from NUFC Matters. Clayton, I believe you wanted to say something about Kepa. You've got about 30 seconds to deliver your verdict or to deliver your customary defence.
I just wanted to basically have a go at Jonathan. And no, I didn't. I just wanted to say that Jonathan was down on him on Monday's fancast. The Athletic had an article this week which was down on him.
That's because of me. They wrote that because of me.
Well, maybe. But I wanted to speak to you, Matt, because, you know, your goalkeeping views. But I just don't get it. I mean, you know, if you look at him, OK, he's not the best goalkeeper in the Premier League, but I can only think of maybe 3 or 4 I'd have instead of him out of the rest of the Premier League. I don't know what people want from him. Yes, they want him to be more commanding. There's no goalkeepers that dominate their box. Name me one goalkeeper who dominates their box. Nobody does anymore. Keepers don't do that.
Clayton, he's got the worst stats of anybody in the Premier League.
I know, but that's basically because of the goal-to-shot ratio.
And the defence.
The defence changes every week.
You're truly exasperated, aren't you, Clayton?
It's circular. A goalkeeper inspires his defence and a defence inspires his goalkeeper. If you change the defence every single week, how can the goalkeeper get used to it? How can the goalkeeper give confidence to people who aren't there the week, you know, one week and gone the next? I know everybody's down on him. I just think everybody should back him and let's have a look at the end of the season.
100% Clayton, couldn't agree with you more. We've got to leave, sadly. We'll continue this debate next week on the Chelsea Fan Show. Kiddo, thank you for joining me.
It's great to be here.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.